And we're holding at the very bottom of the page, Memvav, middle of Os Zayin in Sukkah. We were learning yesterday about the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that even though he was the katan, meaning the least knowledgeable or the youngest of Hillel's Talmidim, we said, does that mean of all his 80 primary Talmidim, or do we mean of the 20 average ones, whatever? Nevertheless, he had mastered everything, every detail of Torah, as well as a lot of things outside of Torah proper, like we said, the speech of the Malachim and the speech of the Shadim and the speech of the trees, etc., etc. So the Gemara says, "Lakayim Mashenemar." This fulfills what's said. This that we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a total knowledge of everything inside and outside of Torah. That says the pasuk says, "Lahanchil Oyhavayesh." Hashem says that, or this is the Torah actually personified, talking and saying that I'm there to give, to bequeath to those who love me, to those who love the Torah and who love Hashem, yesh, a substance for it's sehem amale, and I will fill up their treasury. So in other words, somebody like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who's learning Torah absolutely shema, so Hashem helps him be able to master all of these fields outside of Torah proper, because all of these, at the bottom of page Memvav, now we're at the top of page 92. Now we're at the top of page 92. So the fact that Hashem made it possible for him to help him understand all these things, including things that are normal, that a person normally wouldn't be able to master, like Sichas Malachi Asharis and all, is all as a result of his learning Torah. So the Gemara says, well, if the least of all of Hillel's Talmidim was so great, as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Godol Shebekulam, Alachas Kama Vekama, imagine how great the greatest one must have been. And in fact, Omru Olival, Yonas and Ben Uziel. So they said about Yonas and Ben Uziel, who we said was the greatest among all the Talmidim, or the greatest among that group of Talmidim, whatever, Shebeshah Shahu Yoshe B'Shonev Osek B'Torah, when he was sitting and occupying himself and studying Torah, Kol Oif Shepereach Olav Ba'avah Miyad Nisraf, any bird that flew overhead would get burnt up. How would that be? Rashi explains, because he had Malachim would come and gather around Yonas and Menaziel to hear his Torah learning, and their fire would burn the bird. Tosfa says it's actually because he was learning the Torah as clearly and as it was given by Har Sinai, and by Har Sinai the Torah was given with fire. Therefore, there was a fire around him. Tosfos refers to a medrash that tells about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, where they were one time sitting at a meal, and meanwhile everybody else is busy talking Devarim B'Tehillim, and they said among themselves, "Let's sit in Fartifzich and Torah." And a fire from Shemayim came and surrounded them. So we see that when a person learns Torah on a very high level, then the fire of the original fire of Torah from Har Sinai comes there. Eitz Yosef mentions over here that maybe symbolically, maybe it doesn't necessarily mean actual birds. It may actually mean Ion Yaakov says it may actually refer to mazikim. It may refer to shadim that are constantly flying around and around a person, so they would get burnt up by the power of his Torah. You have a famous thing that the Rebbeim used to say, that this kind of Gemara shows you the difference between a person who learns Torah and Chassid Shaofen versus one who learns it in Masnag the Shaofen, where the Chassid is going to be impressed and reach a greater level of connection to Hashem by realizing how great a person can be in learning Torah and connecting with the Eibishter, whereas a person who doesn't have that mentality is going to start cluttering for himself, well, as Yonis and Nazir Chayev, if the bird belongs to somebody else, and go into that and kind of miss the forest for the trees. The Gemara continues, Tonon Abonon, Teshvu Ka'in Taduru. Now it says, the Pasuk says, Teshvu, you have to sit, Basukas Teshvu, Shivas Yamin. And the Braisa says, that means Ka'in Taduru, it means you have to live, you have to sit in the Sukkah the way you live in your house the rest of the year. Mikanomru, based on this, the Chachamim said, throughout the 7 days of Sukkah, so 8 days in Chutz La'aretz, a person has to make his Sukkah his main place, and his house should be like only his temporary place. Ketzad, what does that mean? If he has nice furniture or nice accessories and things like that, malam la sukkah, he brings them into the sukkah. Matzois nois, if he has nice rugs and things to sit on, malam la sukkah, then he brings them into the sukkah. He eats and drinks and matayo, which can mean walking around, but not necessarily, because your sukkah may not be big enough to stroll around. It means like it can also mean like to enjoy himself. Like he spends his leisure time in the sukkah, or mashanin besukkah, and he should also learn Torah in the sukkah. The Gemara asks on that one, any, is that so? Rava said, as far as learning Tanakh and learning Mishnayos, which are easier subjects, those are in the Metalalta, which is the Aramaic word for the sukkah. Metalalta is the word tula is Aramaic for shade. It's equivalent to the word sail in Hebrew, and therefore Metalalta is the area that's shaded over, namely the sukkah. So that you learn in the sukkah, but Tanuye. But to learn on a deeper level should be bar mitalalta. That should be outside the sukkah, because Rashi explains Tanuye refers to Talmud, namely the Svara, like we talked about yesterday in connection with Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. The Svara is figuring out why is the Mishnah saying what it says and where it gets it from and what similar situations does it apply to and all that kind of thing. The point is, Rashi points out that kind of thing. You want a wider area, and a sukkah is usually fairly small. You're not going to feel as comfortable over there, and therefore you're not going to have the harchovas hadas to learn over there. And the Gemara is assuming that tanuye is basically the same thing as what it said, a mishanin besukkah, because after all, mishanin is Hebrew, and tanuye is the Aramaic equivalent, so therefore that would mean that you should do that outside the sukkah. And the answer is, like Kasha, haba migras haba iyuni. It depends whether we're talking about lemigras, to repeat over quickly something that a person already knows. So then that would be what the braisa means by mishanin, that you should do inside the sukkah. You don't need very much analysis for that, so that you can comfortably do even in the smallish sukkah. But when you're talking about being ma'ayin, when you're talking about analyzing things, and you need a harchovas hadas, and you need a lot of fresh air and so forth, then that would be outside the sukkah, because again you need to be comfortable for that, and in the sukkah you may not be as comfortable. Tosfos says it slightly differently. The point is that even when it comes to within Gemara, even when it comes to a basic psak halacha, this is mutter, that you can do in the sukkah. But when we're talking about to analyze the reasons behind it, why is it osur, why is it mutter, that sort of thing, if you're not comfortable in the sukkah, then better do it outside the sukkah. And the Gemara says, ki hada Rava v'Rami bar Chama, as in fact we have the example of Rava and Rami bar Chama would do exactly that. Ki havo kaimi mekamed Rav Chista, when they would stand up from having learned in front of Rav Chista. Rav Chista was their Rebbe, and they were his Talmidim. So when they had learned a statement, when they had learned a teaching in Gemara from him, a Shmaitza, a teaching, which now for them is for them that's it, you know, that's how it is. They analyze it, but there's no contradicting it or anything. So merahati b'Gemara b'hadi hadori, first they would run over quickly what they had heard from him. This is mutter b'hadi adori together b'hadi ma'ayni b'svara, and then they would go and delve into the svaras. Why did Rav Chista say this is osur or this is mutter or whatever? So that wasn't necessarily doing sukkahs, but the point is that kind of distinction between reviewing the actual halacha and the actual statements in Gemara that you learned versus analyzing them, that's the difference between learning it in the sukkah, where you have to do that, versus the other kind, if you're more comfortable outside the sukkah, then do it outside the sukkah. Okay, the Gemara continues, Pisca, quoting from the Mishnah, that if it rains during sukkahs and a person has to go inside, then it's not a simen bracha. And the Mishnah had said, Moshal ma'adav adoyma, what is it like? It's like when a person, it's like when an eved is bringing a cup of wine to his master, v'shofach le'kitten aponav, and he pours a pitcher of water in his face. So Ibarilahu, the question the Chachmei HaYeshiva had is, the Mishnah doesn't specify who did the pouring, who dashed the water in the other one's face. Mi shofach lami, who is it that did it to who? Meaning, in other words, so Rashi explains, you could say that it means that Eved is splashing the water in his master's face, meaning that he's not doing his job properly. The nimshal of that would be that when it rains during Sukkot, it shows that the Jewish people are not serving Hashem properly. On the other hand, it might be the other way around. It might be that the master is splashing the water in the Eved's face as if to tell him, go away, I don't want you serving me, because go away, I don't want you serving me. So either way, the point is, it would be a simon klala, but the question is, what is the shofach lekitten? Is it the very fact that we're sitting in the sukkah, or is it that it's raining? That shows Hashem's displeasure. Marsha says a little bit differently, that you could look at it either way. Fine, no question the splash in the water in his face represents the rain. The question is it, look, rain is going to come no matter what, or is it the rain is coming specifically because people have not been behaving properly, and therefore the Eibishter is showing his displeasure by making it rain? So which is Toshma Adetanya? So we can prove from a brisa which says more clearly, Shofach le rabbi kitten alponav, the master is splashing the pitcher of water in his Eved's face. And he's telling him, I don't want you serving me. So we understand that it means, in other words, that when it rains during sukkahs, so according to Rashi's explanation, the point is, it's not so much that the sitting in the sukkah in and of itself is a negative thing, but the point is, Hashem is showing at a time like that, that it's not, that I don't appreciate what you're doing by sitting in the sukkah, and therefore I'm going to drive you out. According to Marsha, the vote is that it shows then that that's happening because of people's chatoim. With all that said, nevertheless, there are a lot of different points that that various achronim make on the subject. Among them, that it doesn't necessarily apply if it started raining before Sukkot and continues raining into Sukkot. It doesn't necessarily apply in Chutz La'aretz, in places where the climate is not like in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't often rain during Tishrei anyhow. The rainy season generally begins in Cheshvan. So for it to begin early in Tishrei is not such a great thing. But in other places in the world where it regularly rains that time of year, then it's not necessarily a problem. There's, in fact, the Sefer Magid Meisharim from the Beis Yosef tells that there's a famous Sefer where there was a Malach. This Malach comes to the Beis Yosef and introduces himself. I'm the spirit of the Mishnah that you're constantly learning, Mishnah Osius Neshama, and he comes and teaches the Beis Yosef different things in Kabbalah and tells him different secrets from Shamayim. And the Beis Yosef wrote basically what amounts to a diary of all the things that this Magid told him, and the Sefer was eventually published, and it's called Magid Meisharim. So he tells where one time it was raining during Sukkot, and he's very upset, and then thinking, based on what the Mishnah is saying, it seems that the Eibishter is upset with us. And the Magid comes and tells him, no, what happened was, you had visited the caver of Rashbi and Rabbi Lazar earlier during Sukkot. Now, you were going around over there, you were circling around the caver with your lulav and esrog. That evoked, the lulav, after all, is meant to ask Hashem for rain. So that evoked rain, min hashamayim. And in fact, the Magid tells him it's a good thing you didn't do any more than that, or there would have been a rain like the Mabel. So sometimes you have, in other words, that the rain is adarabba, simen bracha. And then, famously, the Rebbe talked about, in particular in Tavshin Lamed Vav, some 40 odd years ago, there was one sukkah when it was extremely rainy here in Crown Heights. I wasn't around yet then. I was a little boy, first of all, and second of all, I wasn't living here yet. From what I've heard about it from those who were there at the time, it basically, like the first night, it was okay, but then it still was pouring pretty much continuously throughout the whole sukkah. And somebody asked the Rebbe about it, and the Rebbe wrote back a note that said, basically, look, since the fact is, we've seen during sukkahs that people have been sitting in the sukkah and even making the bracha, asher kedeshanu b'mitzvosa b'tzivanu loisha basukkah, so we can't say that it means that Hashem is upset with our avodah and doesn't want us to do it. Adrabba, then the implication was, in other words, that Hashem wants us to show a little mesiras nefesh for the mitzvah of sukkah. Earlier, yeah.
Oh, it's,
yeah. The Rebbe B'chlal never went with an umbrella, interesting. But as far as sukkahs, particularly in Oitzim and Hogi Chabad, there's several pages on the subject. He mentions over there something that's brought from the time of the Rebbe Rashab, where one time in Lubavitch, it was raining during sukkahs, and he goes into the sukkah to see how the sukkah of Tem Chetmimim, to see what Vacharim are doing over there, or the Rebbe Rashab himself goes, or he sends somebody else. I don't remember anyway. He gets a report back. The Vacharim are sitting over there basically with hunched over their food with their coat over their heads, so the food doesn't get too wet. And the Rebbe Rashab was very pleased with that and says that shows real mesiras nefesh for the mitzvah. And b'chlal, Oitzim and Hogi Chabad mentions over there in great detail how in many chassidish akraisin they eat in the rain no matter what. Okay. The Gemara continues, since we're talking about things that are not, at least on the face of it, a simen bracha. So the Gemara says, Tonan Abon, Bizman Shah Chama Loike, when the sun is in eclipse, simon ra l'chol olam kuloi, then it's a bad simon for the whole world. Moshe l'mar dover domer, what is this like? L'melech basav adam, sha'asa se'udah l'chol avodav, it's like a human king made a feast for all his servants, v'iniach ponas l'fneihem, and he put a lantern in front of them so they should have light when they're seeing. Marsha refers to, you know, we had in Yuma that a person enjoys their food more when they're able to see it. So therefore, he puts light over there so they're able to see. Kasa melech aleihem, but then the king is angry at them. Va'amal avdo, so he tells one of his servants, Tur ponas mipneihem, take the lantern away from them. Va'yishivim b'choshech, and let them sit in the dark. So the same way, when there's an eclipse, is it's showing that the Eibishter is treating the world that way. Now, you have a big question that many, many Rishonim and Achronim deal with. On this and on the whole continuation of the piece of it here, the whole rest of this ois and part of the next ois, where it's talking about different reasons, different negative reasons for which eclipses happen. The obvious question that everybody asks is eclipses are a very natural event. You can predict them thousands of years in advance. How can we say that it's a simen ra? And then the Gemara is going to go on to say that it's a sign that people are doing certain averus and so on and so forth. How could that be when they're so regularly predictable? So there's many, many different answers all across the spectrum of Sfarim. First of all, there are Mefarshim who want to say that maybe, in fact, it's not talking about eclipses, but other things. Anaf Yosef over here refers to something from Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz in a Sefer Yaris Dvash, who says we're not talking about eclipses. We're talking about, for example, at least in the case of the sun, we're talking about sunspots. So sunspots are not quite so predictable. So then you can say that those are a simon of Hashem's displeasure with the world. The Rebbe actually shtelzach on that in a sicha in Chelik Tesvav, and says it's very hard to say that for a number of reasons. Among other things, your average person b'chlal doesn't realize when there are sunspots. It's not like they make that much of a difference to the light of the sun. So it's not like in the mashal over here where we're saying that Hashem takes away the lantern. They're also at least semi-predictable. There's a certain sunspot cycle. They're not exactly as predictable as eclipses down to the minute, but broadly they are. And several other problems. Then there are Mephoshim who understand that it means that you can have a difference whether the eclipse is visible. You can always have, for example, an eclipse that it's cloudy and you don't see it. But also that doesn't seem to work out so well. Ultimately, the Rebbe talks about in that sicha, and earlier you have Iyun Yaakov and then Oruch Haner here on this Gemara make the point that it's kind of the other way around. The cause and effect is at times when there's an eclipse, and yes, they are predictable. Those are times when Mekatrig have stronger power. When therefore Yamalachim can more be Mekatrig on people who are doing things wrong, and therefore that's the Gemara means that it's a simen ra in the sense that then there's more of a power for the Mekatrigim to do their work. Then you also have, there are a lot of different Sfarim that talk about, well, we'll talk about that actually in a little bit when the Gemara brings the reasons the Gemara is going to mention at the bottom of the Amud. We'll have Bishvil Dalet Dvarim Chama Loika, so we'll talk about within that, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about what various Sfarim say on that. Anyway, but right now we're saying that's a Simen Ra for the world, but Tanya Rav Meir, Rav Meir says actually it's not necessarily for the whole world, but rather Bizman Shema Urdas Loikin, when there are eclipses, or however we understand Ma'odas Loikin, Simen Ra L'Sin Eim Shal Yisrael. It's a bad simen specifically for the enemies of the Jewish people, and that's the Gemara's usual euphemism for the Jewish people themselves. Mepnei Shel Melumadin B'Makay Sehen, because the Jewish people are used to being hit. Rashi points out the Jewish people tend to get more punishments than the rest of the nations. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah points out that it's for our benefit, like this with the other nations. The Eibishter waits and waits and waits until they filled up their measure, until the Smala saw them, and then boom, they're gone. Whereas us, the Eibishter does little by little over the centuries, and that way we continue to survive. But still, the point is that we Jewish people have a much harder history than the other nations. So therefore, when there's a bad simon like that, then it's more likely the Jewish people should be saying that this is something meant for us. Marsha says that actually Ma'oi Rois over here would specifically mean the moon and the stars, not necessarily the sun, because the next piece is going to say that when the sun is in eclipse, it's a simon ra for the goyim, actually. So therefore, when we say Ma'oi Rois over here would mean the moon and the stars, and he says a different meaning of Mulamad and Mamakasehen means the one who learns the lesson from the blows. So, so the Gemara says, Moshal a sofer, Shabbala beis a sefer. That's like when the teacher comes to the cheder or the tzua biyada, and he has a strap in his hand that he's going to be using to give petch to whoever's out of line. Mi doyeg, who's the one who's going to have to be scared? Misha roger locus, b'chol yom hu doyeg. The kid who's usually in trouble in class is the one who's going to have to be worried. So therefore, in the nimshal, that's the Jewish people. Which Marsha says, then the vote is, who does the teacher give petch to? The one who he expects could do better and is not living up to his potential. The one who, anyway, the teacher realizes he's a gurnish, he's not going to amount to anything anyway. Why should the teacher bother even giving him pech? So the same way, the Ebishter knows that we have the Torah. We're expected to learn better. And if not, then the Ebishter has more reason to take it out on us. The Gemara continues, Tonan Abonin, Bizman Shacham Aloike, when the sun is eclipsed, Simen Ra Lo'ivdikachovim, then it's a bad simen for the Goyim. Lavona loike, and when it's the moon, it's an eclipse. Simen rala senem show Yisrael. Then it's a bad simen for the enemies of, meaning the Jewish people themselves. Mishum shi Yisrael, moon and lavona go every kachav lachama, because we Jews count our dates according to the moon, and the goyim count their calendar exclusively according to the sun. Marashog refers to the Ramadroshim that point out in connection with last week's parasha, in connection with HaChodesh Azalachem. There's many comparisons between the goyim and the sun, and the Jewish people and the moon. The moon, the sun is bigger, and the same way Esav is bigger and older than Yaakov. The sun is by day, the moon is by night, representing that the goyim have their memshala in this world, and actually the moon you can see sometimes in the sky by day and by night. So the same way we Jewish people have olam hazeh and olam haba, you have the famous thing about the 30 generations from Adam until Avram until the Churban Bayis tradition, which are compared to the 30 days of the moon. We say by Kiddush Levana, those who have said Kiddush Levana this month, good. Those who haven't yet, make sure you do it real soon. We say v'la Levana mashitus chadash. Hashem told the moon to renew itself. Ateres tiferes. That's a crown of glory for we Jewish people who are carried in Hashem's womb, that we will be renewed the same way as the moon is renewed every month. So there's many different ways in which the Jewish people are compared to the moon. Api Kabbalah, you have the whole idea that the moon is the Makabal, and we're the Makabal from the Ebishter, and so on and so on. And the moon is Malchus, and the Jewish people are Malchus, and so on and so forth. So yeah. So continues the Gemara, Loike b'Mizrach, if the eclipse takes place on the east side of the sky, Simen Ra l'Yoshev Mizrach, then it's a bad Simen for those who live towards the east. B'Mairev, if it's towards the west, Simen Ra l'Yoshev Mairev, then it's a bad Simen for those who live in that direction, in the west. B'Emtza Rakia, if it happens in the middle of the day, Simen Ra l'Chol Olam Kula, then it's a bad Simen for the world at large. Similarly, Ponav Shochama Domim L'Dam, if the sun during the eclipse, now not always do you have during the, many times you have some, sometimes you'll have a total eclipse when the sun looks like a black dot in the sky with the corona of the sun around it, but sometimes you'll have a partial eclipse, or you'll have a reflection from whatever, and sometimes you'll have that it'll appear a reddish color, and particularly you have that more by, you have a lot of times by lunar eclipse, you'll have that where many times you'll have some earth shine on the moon and it'll appear red. So Ponav Shochama Domim L'Dam, if the surface of the sun during an eclipse looks like blood, it looks like red, then it's a simen cherev bo la'olam, then it shows that a sword, it shows that war is coming to the world. L'sak, if it looks like a sack, if it's black, chitzei rav bo la'olam, then it means that the arrow is a famine, meaning there's going to be a famine. So Rashi explains, what's the connection between black and a famine? Rashi says, because during a famine, people are short of food, their faces turn black from hunger. Marsha says that's a little bit of a doichuk. Rather, he says the vote is a sack. You put grain in it, as we find by Yosef and his brothers. So therefore, when the sun looks like an empty sack, then it means that there are empty sacks in the offing. Lozev, it looks like both. If it looks reddish and black, then it means the simon that both things are coming. Also, lokabikni sasai. If the eclipse happens when the sun is coming in, meaning, in other words, as the sun is setting, Puranus Shoy Halavai, then it means there's whatever disaster that it's portending is going to happen, but it's going to be with a delay. Bitziose, if it happens when the sun is coming out, when the sun is rising, Puranus Maheres Lavai La'olam, then it means it's coming real soon. The point being, in other words, the same way Rashi says, that like this, in other words, the eclipse was delayed until almost the end of the day, shows that it'll be delayed for the future, as opposed to it happens first thing in the morning, then it shows that the Puranas is also coming in the near future. The Yeshem, Chiluf HaDvarim, others say the other way around. Fakert, you could say that if the eclipse happens at sunset, then it means it's going to come real soon. Like, look at that. The sun didn't even have the normal amount of time to set, and it's being eclipsed. So therefore, that shows that the Puranas is happening very soon, as opposed to Bitsiyasa, you're saying like there's still plenty of time left for the sun to have its normal course in the sky during the day. So therefore, that after the eclipse, so that represents, therefore, that the Puranas will take its time in coming. And the Braisa continues, you never have that a nation is struck by punishment, that their gods are not struck and punished together with it. Shenemar, as we have in last week's parasha, Hashem says, when I punish Mitzrayim, I'm also going to execute judgments against all the gods of Mitzrayim. Rashi points out, by the gods over here of the nations, we mean in particular the Tsar of that nation. For example, you have the Samach Mem for Esav. So whenever the nation is struck and punished, so is the Malach as well. Marsha says that, what does that have to do with the Gemara we're talking about over here, though? Rather, Marsha says it means that we said when the sun is eclipsed, then it shows the bad simon for the Goyim. Well, because the Goyim worship the sun. So therefore, that's what we're saying. When Hashem is punishing the nation, then that's the time when you have an eclipse, and then that shows that that nation is going to be punished. And he continues, it was Manshi Yisrael Oisin Ritzoni Shalakadosh Baruch Hu. When the Jewish people do what Hashem wants, Ein Misyan and Mikolelu, then we have nothing to be afraid of any of these things. This, that, everything that we're saying, that it's a Simon Ra for the world, and it's a Simon Ra for the Jewish people, particularly some of them, and we're saying over here, so when we're Oisin Ritzoni Shalakadosh, we have nothing to worry about. Marsha says, in particular, that means, we just said that, according to his explanation, that when the nation gets punished, then the sun that they worship is also eclipsed. Well, if the Jewish people are Oisin Ritzon Shamakim, then look, we're not under the control of the sun or any other planets, and we don't worship them. So therefore, we have nothing to worry about. Shenemar is, in fact, the Pasuk says. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says it means, in addition, it means even the Jews who are living in those Goyish countries have nothing to worry about. Sometimes you have, a country suffers a disaster and you have all the innocent people over there also end up getting caught in the crossfire. So here we're saying when the Jewish people are Oisin Ritzon Shamakim, then they have nothing to worry about that. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Koyaman Hashem, El Derech HaGoyim Al Tilmodu. Hashem says, don't learn from the ways of the Goyim. Don't learn to act like they do. And then, Umeoses Shemaim Al Techotu. And then you won't have to be afraid of the signs in heaven, such as eclipses and things like that. Ki Yechatu HaGoyim Mehema, because as the Navi continues, the Goyim are afraid of those things, but you don't need to be afraid of them. Meaning, only the Goyim need to be afraid of such things because of their behavior. We Jewish people do not, when we're El Derech HaGoyim Al Tilmodu, when we know to not behave and then learn from the ways of the Goyim. What? Parshas Bechukot HaKaisai is one thing of that. Yeah, there's lots of others, yeah. So the Gemara continues. Tonan Abanim, Bishvil Dalad Dvarim Chama Loite. There are four things that cause that the sun is eclipsed. And here also you have all the four averas that the Gemara is going to mention. And again, here you have all the various explanations that we mentioned before of how that could be if eclipses are predictable. So you have all those considerations that we said before, whether it means sunspots, whether it means that the eclipse is visible, whether it means the other way around, that at a time like that is when the Mekatrigim have greater power. Anyway, the four things are Al-Av based in Shemes Ve'in and Nisbet Ka'alocha. The first one is an Av Bastin passed away and he was not given a hesped properly. You're supposed to make a hesped. Okay, I mean, a Chabad is we don't make a spade by the Levaya for various reasons, but even at least afterwards, you have a get-together where they talk about and in praise of the Nifter. So here you have an Av Bastin, an Odom Godol passed away and they didn't make a proper hesped for him. So then that's a reason that there should be an eclipse. And the second one, the second one is you have a Naira Mairosa is being raped and she's in the city and she's screaming out and there are people who hear her and could come and help her and nobody helps her. Where the Pasuk mentions the scenario and it says if it happened out in the Pasuk mentions where usually if this happens in the city, usually we assume if she didn't scream out, then that's a problem. Then she's Chayav Misa because we assume that it was Barosa. Rotzen, but you were talking about it, was in the city, and she cried out for help. And even though Api Alocha, anybody is supposed to come and help her, and even kill the droid if necessary, nobody bothered. So for that, there would be a likri chama. For that, there would be ma'oris loikin, or chama loikin specifically. We're saying that there would be a solar eclipse. The third one is Val Mishkab Zocher, and the fourth one, Val Shnei Achim Shenishbach Domim Ke'echad, when two brothers are both killed at the same time. Now, so what does all this mean? Rashi says, I don't understand. What do these four things have to do with eclipses? Maushal says you could give reasons for some of them. You could say that an Av Beis Din is like Moshe of his times. Like Moshe, we know his face was like the sun. So therefore, an Av Beis Din was like the sun, and now he passed away, and nobody bothers, nobody recognizes what his contribution was to the Jewish people and to his Kehillah, and therefore they don't bother making a hesped for him. So therefore an eclipse happens because of that. As far as the Naira Marot, so it's as clear as day, it's as clear as the sun that she's screaming out and she needs help and nobody is bothering. So he doesn't explain the other two, but maybe it's in the same vein. We're talking about very obvious, clear things that are going wrong and nobody's taking steps to do anything about it. There are quite a lot of things in various Svarim. You have there's an interesting sefer called Yesod Olam from the author was named Reb Yitzchak HaYisraeli. He was a Talmud of the Rosh after the Rosh had moved to Spain. This Reb Yitzchak was a Talmud of the Rosh over there. The Rosh asked him to write a sefer on astronomy, and he did. He was an expert astronomer, and he wrote a whole sefer on the details of astronomy as we find it in Torah and Lahavdil, as we find it in various Goyish works. It's for example, if you want to understand the Rambam's Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, then it helps. It's a sefer that explains in a lot more detail a lot of things that Rambam says over there. Anyway, he deals with this Gemara and of course asks the question that, yeah, they're all natural, predictable things. So he says that the Gemara over here is hinting at, we know what's the actual, what does it mean when there's a solar eclipse? It means the moon is directly in front of the sun, instead of normally at the beginning of the month, you have the moon is in a straight east-west line with the sun, but it's usually a little bit north or south of it, and therefore it doesn't block the sun, whereas by an eclipse it is blocking the sun. So he explains that the Gemara over here was using these four things symbolically to represent that the moon is, like, so to speak, where it shouldn't be. So, like, for example, he says the Av Beis Din, who passed away and wasn't Nisbat Ka'alacha, means, in other words, basically the moon should recognize the primacy of the sun and stay out of its way, and instead it doesn't. Instead, it's in the way. So, therefore, symbolically, the Gemara calls that the Av Beis Din was not Nisbat Ka'alacha. And he explains the other ones in a similar vein. Then you have the Akedas Yitzchak deals with this, and he says it's the whole explanation is a little bit of a doichet. He says that what it means is the Gemara is not talking about solar eclipses at all. Rather, the Gemara is talking similar to what Maharsha says, for example, that the Av Beis Din, the great Talmud Chacham of the generation, is compared to the sun. So, Fakir, the Gemara is saying, when does it happen that a Talmud Chacham is taken away, that a Tzaddik is taken away from the generation, which is like a solar eclipse, is when you have that people don't recognize the importance of the Talmud Chachamim among them, or that they don't save the vulnerable, such as the Naira Ma'irasa, and so forth. The Ramah also deals with it. The Ramah wrote a sefer Torah Sa'ola, and he deals with this, and he explains along the same lines as the Yesod Olam, but he explains in a little more detail. He says that the Gemara, by giving four reasons, is symbolizing the four different seasons of the year when eclipses can happen, and he gives a whole arichos about that, and there's a lot of different things. And then the Maharal talks about it, the Maharal, as he often does. All of these Svarim, by the way, point out that there were many people in their times, each in their respective times, who were using this to mock the Chachamim. They were saying, it sounds like Chas V'Shalom, the Chacham didn't understand basic science, and they didn't understand how eclipses work, and therefore they have to give these reasons. So each of these Chachamim, each one in their Sefer, explains that, no, I have to explain it in order to show that the Chachamim absolutely, that our Chachamim in the Gemara absolutely knew what they were talking about. So the Maharal does a similar thing. He wrote a whole sefer called Be'er Agoila to deal with someone in his times who was making such arguments. So he explains that the Gemara is also, it means, in other words, like, the, for example, the Av Beis Din, the Nisbat Ka'alacha, and the other ones all represent, like, there's a total breakdown of how a Jewish society should be. And therefore, that's symbolized by, therefore, the Eibishter says, what do you need the light for in that case? You may as well not have the light. And therefore, the Gemara attributes eclipses to such things. Okay, the Gemara continues. Over Shvila Bar Dvarim Ma'oris Loikin. Then there are four other causes for which Ma'oris, which would mean the moon and the stars, that they get eclipsed. Al Kosvei Plaster. The first one is for people who write false documents. So Rashi describes, for example, they write, let's say, false shtaris in a person's name, or they write false letters in his name to claim that he gave orders that that he hadn't actually. So that kind of thing. For people who say false eders, people who raise sheep and goats, small animals in Eretz Yisrael. We just have actually currently today's Daf HaYomi actually talks yesterday's and today's Daf HaYomi actually talks about that point that you're not supposed to raise them in Eretz Yisrael because they damage other people's fields. So that's a cause then for Ma'odis Loken. And the fourth one, Valkotze, Lonis Tovis, people who chop down good trees, even if they belong to them, it's still, it shows, it actually says, as if like they're rejecting and saying, who needs the bounty that Hashem gave to the world of fruit trees? And he just cuts them down, and he just cuts them down indiscriminately. Marsha explains that here we're talking about the moon and the stars primarily. Now, these are all things, these four things that the Gemara mentioned, unlike the previous four, are not such obvious public things. Unlike, for example, in Abbasin, where there wasn't a Hesbid, where it's an obvious public thing that something was not done, these kinds of things, what people writing forged documents and giving Aedus Sheker and so forth, is not so obvious, and therefore it connects with the moon, which is also, unlike the sun, is sometimes hidden and sometimes visible. So that's why you have the connection between them. And again, the various Sforim that I just mentioned also talk about various symbolic explanations of what the Gemara means by mentioning these things. Then the Gemara continues, then there are four reasons for which the Nechosim of Balabatim end up getting handed over to the government. For four things that they do wrong. Al mashe shtoris pruim. The first one is they keep around documents that have already been paid off. And Rashi explains they want to then claim afterwards and use them afterwards later on. The guy's going to say, I paid off. And the malver is going to take out the shtar again and say, look, you still owe me the money. Otherwise, why do I have the shtar? Marsha says that would obviously absolute gezel. So then why is the Gemara not just saying plain old gezel? Rather, Marsha says we're talking about, let's say, for example, he wants to hold it. He wants to hold on to it because he still has some outstanding claim against the other guy. He wants to use the shtar in order to use it as a basis for a migui or something like that. So it's not outright theft. He's not actually literally planning to collect the debt again, but at least he wants to use it as evidence in a case in Basin, but he still has no business doing that. Once the shtar is paid off, it's supposed to be ripped up or returned to the loaner. Thou malvi beribis, when people lend at ribis, that causes their wealth to disappear. Rashi brings from a Gemara in Bava Metzia that says their wealth ends up getting confiscated by the government. Marsha says again, we don't mean people who blatantly go and lend at ribis, but for example, they don't care to make a proper heter iska for their loans. People who have the ability to be moicha against such balabatim, or these balabatim themselves have the ability to be moicha, to protest against the over avera of their times, and people would listen to them, Rashi says, because after all, they're rich and they're smart and so forth, and they don't bother, so they don't. So for that, they end up losing their wealth. And the fourth one, and the fourth one is people who promised tzedakah in public, and they don't end up giving it. So for that reason also, they end up losing their wealth. Now, Marsha says also, now we're talking about, for example, they might later on claim, we didn't actually intend to give it. We just wanted to do that to encourage other people. When other people hear us pledging in shul, for example, then they'll be encouraged to donate as well. But we never had in mind to actually donate. Nevertheless, the Eivishta holds it against them if they don't actually fulfill their pledge, and therefore they end up losing their wealth. You know what I'm saying? The fourth one was where they pledged tzedakah in public and they don't give it yet. Then there are four reasons for which the Nechosim of Balabatim end up going to Timyon. Rashi explains Timyon means basically they disappear on their own. So unlike Nimsorim Lamalchus, where they're confiscated by their government, here we just mean that they gradually lose their wealth in other ways. The Oruch actually explains that Timyon is another word for the government treasury, in which case, I think the Oruch Haner explains that Nimsorim Lamalchus would be, for example, let's say, to put it in modern terms, somebody reports them to the IRS, whereas the Yod and the Timyon would mean that the IRS actually confiscates it from them. Anyway, Al Koiv She Schar Sacher, where they hold back the wages of a laborer. So Rashi says, for example, they don't say outright, I'm not going to pay you, but they'd say every time, come back another time, I don't have it right now, when in fact they do. aval ushke schar socher, or when they actually hold it back completely and don't even pay it at all. Marshall says that rather what it means is, in other words, they're not even saying leich b'shuv, but they're not paying it in time. We know that the Torah says b'yoyme titin schora, you have to pay a worker on the day or on the night that he finishes his work. The Gemara has a whole sugya about it in Bava Metzia, and here the oshke schar socher, they don't do that and they delay. The third one is people who cast off the yoke from their necks, meaning, in other words, our show explains, they're bale gaiva. They think we don't have to take on the responsibilities that the government imposes on the tzibur or whatever. Other people will do it for us. And the fourth one, and for people who have gasis haruach, who are gaiva, gasis haruach, keneged kulon, and the gasis haruach is equal in its badness to all of them. The point is, in other words, our show explains all of these things are related to gaiva, and because of gaiva, the Gemara elsewhere says that gaiva goes together with poverty, therefore they become poor. But the Gemara wants to finish on the parak on a good note. Avoban novim ksiv, when it comes to the humble people, the pasuk says, van novim yushu aretz, the humble people will inherit the world. And the pasuk in a different pasuk says, netzim atoy masi yodeli spur, that the Jewish people are the branch of Hashem's planting, the work of my hands in which I take pride, or the continuation of the pasuk until him, vis angu aroiv shalom, that the anovim, the humble people, will enjoy a tremendous amount of shalom. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. What is today? Chof Aleph Shvat. No, Chof Shvat. No. What is today? No. Yud Beis Shvat. Thank you. Okay. We have the famous Yalkut Shimoni that the Rebbe was quoting all the time during the first Gulf War, that Melech HaMashiach is going to stand on the roof of the Beis Mikdash and announce Anovim Yigiyaz Man Golaskam, Anovim, like we just had here in the Gemara. So as in fact has been announced lately, and you have the expression Oymed Agag Beis Hamikdash. After all, the roofs in Halacha, the roofs of the buildings in the Beis Hamikdash, do not have the same level of kedusha as the rest of the Beis Hamikdash. So in this, the it's being merames that this announcement comes from Chutz La'aretz, which doesn't have the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, similar to the distinction between the roof of the Beis Hamikdash and the floor of the buildings of the Beis Hamikdash. But the announcement will come from a place that doesn't have the total kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Continuing on the halachas of Lechem Mishnah. So if only one person has Lechem Mishnah in front of him, then he should be cutting the bread and be motzi everybody, and then also there'll be yotze with his bracha motzi. In practice, we often see that people make their own bracha motzi regardless. He should say Birshus Mordev Rabosai, although that doesn't seem to be our minhag, and then after he eats a little bit, and then he gives each other person a piece, because the point is he has to eat as close as possible to the bracha. So once he made the bracha and he cuts, then he has to eat before he starts distributing to everybody else.